space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, mad science is the key to the truth about free energy. Ask me why. You know, I've been saying for quite a long time that energy is free. You know, pointed out the fact that you never had to pay a bill to the sun, you never had to pay a bill to the wind and the earth and the water. You know, it's never been a case of we didn't have enough energy. It's just that we haven't been using the energy that we have access to properly. All these different types of transformers that you see out there on the market today, they have a lot of them that are, you know, pretty efficient. according to the standards of actually how we use electricity. But nonetheless, if they're getting hot for any reason whatsoever, then that means that you're putting too much energy into that transformer. You know, they call it eddy currents. That's what causes the heat inside there. You get little whirlpools of magnetic flux inside there, and you know, it's basically stirring everything up, causing it to get hot. Well, these experiments that I've been doing recently with this particular circuit that I'll probably post again a picture of so that you can see the exact circuit. But nonetheless, if you go back in my videos over there off of YouTube, you'll see there's a couple videos called Coil Driver. And in there I explain this particular circuit, and if you go down to the doggone description at the bottom, you'll see that there's actually a link to YouTube, not YouTube, but eBay, where I bought these, and I also found the seller that you can actually get them cheaper. These are pretty little impressive circuits. Basically ends up being a pulse DC circuit. But the key about this particular circuit is the way that I'm using this thing. The transistors inside there, they do not get hot. No matter how many coils you try to pulse at the same time with it, they do not get hot. Now the only time that this thing will trip the relay on there is when it's trying to pull too much of a load. But I figured out that you can actually run an amazing amount of these transformers in series with one another. As long as that signal path isn't interrupted or bounced back to this circuit, then that will pulse those coils. The primaries and the coils, which in, produces you know, the induction that we know for the secondary to produce the electricity. And so these are pretty amazing little circuits. And because it's a pulse DC signal on the outside, I found that you can actually run DC electric motors with these things. Now, keep in mind that this particular signal that's coming up out of there, it's not going to run the motor to its maximum potential if you actually had a direct line to your battery. But nonetheless, it's still going to run this motor. But I believe that with these particular circuits right here, that you could literally design a really powerful electric motor using old transformer cores, modified E-cores. Like in this video that I put out there, Energy Now, it has microwave oven transformers that I show inside there where I cut the welds on there and expose the E-core to it. And I'm able to take these transformers and I'm stacking them on top of each other. And that magnetic field that's produced inside there, it's pretty amazing that that magnetic field, it just wants to saturate anything metal in the area. It wants a place to go. It does. It's like blowing up a balloon. If you poke a hole in any portion of that balloon, and that air will go whichever path that you poke that hole. But inside these transformers, whenever you pressurize these transformers with voltage, that magnetic field doesn't have anywhere to go but that core. And so if you take another core and stack it on there, now you just gave that magnetic field a path to go. And so you can literally energize two separate transformers or more just by stacking those things together. If you notice in the video, if you watch the video, that I've got not one but three transformers stacked on top of each other. They're not welded together. Welding them together would probably be beneficial because then they wouldn't vibrate. But nonetheless, the magnetic field that's actually created inside the primaries of these things is a really strong force. I'll show in that particular video that you can see I picked this transformer up with two fingers. And even though the transformer's a little heavy and because of the metal on there, I'm still able to pick it up easy. But once I kick this circuit on, you can try to pick it up, and it's got a really strong magnetic, electromagnetic force that's pulling those two transformers together. And you can actually, if you want, you can actually turn the coils, the polarity of the coils in either direction. One of them, when the field is expanding and collapsing, is causing that vibration you just heard as I turned that thing on. Get that transferred over to the microphone. The other one, it will actually run silently and become a really powerful electromagnet. So there's a whole lot more going on in those transformers than people realize. And once you get an understanding of what's actually occurring with that magnetic field, that magnetic field just wants to expand and expand and expand. And it needs a place to go. If it doesn't have no place to go, well then just like everything else, it's going to produce heat. And that's why these transformers get hot. If you give that magnetic field a place to go, it'll continue to go. I believe that's why Joseph Newman's motor worked so well, is because of the size of the flywheel that he had. He had a lot of copper wire. I think he had like 9,000 feet of copper wire. And he had a lot of iron, a place for the magnetic flux to be able to just spread out. We've been using energy basically wrong all along. Everything from when we're running internal combustion engines to using electrical current and stuff. It only takes a tiny fraction of energy to do the work that we need to do, yet we cram a lot of fuel down the injection systems of the cars and machinery that we run, and we do the same thing with electricity. One thing that this circuit shows me is that you can mimic the magnetic field of a permanent magnet, a rare earth magnet or whatever. You can mimic that field electrically. So electricity and magnetic fields go hand in hand, and they work vice versa, either direction. You can either spin the magnet past some coils of wire to produce a electrical current, you know, and even rubbing a balloon on your hair does the same thing, produces electrical current. So there's so many different ways in order to get that effect that we call electricity. And to be able to utilize it in a efficient manner, the words I'm trying to find, I'm not doing so well with. The electric bills that everybody out there basically have to pay in order to be able to enjoy the air conditioning and the heating and cooling and everything that they need to run in their house to be able to enjoy the luxuries of life. The money makers out there, they figured out a way to monopolize on something that if one could actually replicate without all the expense of being able to build a hydroelectric dam or a coal-fired power plant or a nuclear power plant, and you could if you could mimic the same exact methods that they're using to produce electricity on a small scale, then you put it in the hands of everybody. And I believe that a circuit like this one right here is the key to it all. Because this circuit right here is basically able to mimic that magnetic field in any transformer. And we actually even have the capability of using transistors and MOSFETs and 555 timers and different IC chips to turn things on and off. This particular one has a relay in there that will take the power from the battery and kick the relay on, and that would energize this circuit, because the power necessary to run this is less than the power than that battery is actually able to push out. So you have to basically use up some of that power from that battery before you start trying to run these transistors, otherwise these transistors won't last very long. But the key to that is that battery is only maintaining this doggone solenoid inside there. That's it. The rest of it is just flowing through and turning the switch on and off rapidly, producing a signal. And that signal is going in to the windings of the transformer and changing the polarity back and forth, producing a wave. That's it. That's all it's doing. It's no different than turning the switch on and off real fast. That's it. It's not even rocket science. But it does it in a way that, you know, you're not drawing a lot of current to do all this. I also did a video called Rotary Switch. The Rotary Switch is a method by which you could actually use the same process without having to have transistors. See, the problem is, once these transistors or MOSFETs or even the 555 timers or IC chips or whatever, once they have to be forced to draw a load on there, then they either pull or push too much current through the dang transistors and such, which causes them to get hot and reach their thermal breakdown. And the reason for the rotary switch is because not only is the coil getting pressurized, but the actual battery that you're pulling the power from is being pressurized. And when you break that circuit, nature pushes all that energy right back to where it was. But in the process of it, you get a heavy-duty spike of power. And so just by turning this thing off, making and breaking the circuit, you're able to catch what we call electricity, a massive spike of energy as this thing's pushing itself back to its normal balance. You know, people say that when I'm talking to them, I'm like way over their head. They just say that, well, I'm just a layman. I don't understand, you know, all your terminology or what you're trying to say is, but I've tried to explain this in the same fashion that you would understand how water flows. Because if you understand how water flows, if you take any hose, clear hose, and you can see the water, and you force pressure to either side of it, you can actually observe what's happening. You can observe the direction of the flow. You can observe what happens when you put pressure here or pressure there. You can actually split the water in two different directions. The same thing that you see going on with water is what you see going on with electricity. Now, I spent a lot of time searching and collecting parts. trying to find everything under the sun that is off the store shelf for building a device that would essentially prove everything that I said. This particular circuit I'm really impressed with. It's not the only one out there, but it is one that I know that I can use to literally, quite literally, build an electric motor generator that will be the most powerful high voltage machine in the history of time. But it's just taking this component and that component and everything, all the best of the best out there, and putting them together. It's not the holy grail of free energy. What it is the holy grail of efficiency. And even that efficiency could be topped off as well. I believe there's no limitations to how far we could actually push efficiency. And all the terminology that we've had to fight with over the years doing alternative energy research, such as over unity and zero point and perpetual motion and all that, those are just distractions away from what we could actually accomplish in the real world with real science, with real off-the-shelf technology. Mad science is the key to free energy. I want to make that t-shirt. It says on there, "Mad science is key to mad science is the key to truth about free energy. Ask me why." And it's got shazoozradio.com. There's a picture of the one that I want to do. And I want to do this just so I can get a dialogue opened up with people out there that's interested in alternative energy. I try to reach out to gather the wisest, the smartest, the most talented people that I could find and from all over the world. Tried to get them to come to the table and, you know, basically work as a team to build things. But what I found is a lot of people are really seriously stuck in the school book. They're hung up on terminology. They've been told and indoctrinated for so long that things are not possible. And so they don't believe it's possible. And if you don't believe it's possible, then you're quite literally wasting your time. I've been spent years studying how electricity actually functions, how energy actually travels. And I'm taking all these findings and I'm putting them together in a manner in which that everybody should be able to understand by the time it's all said and done. Everybody should be able to afford to replicate and test and be able to share that information with the rest of the world. It's never been an energy crisis. It's never been a case that we don't have enough power. It's just the fact that we're not using it properly. These transformers, they have so much more potential than what we're doing. When you look in that video and you actually pay attention mechanically of what's actually occurring in there, and you really think through it, you start doing the math down there. It's a show in there. I got a wireless AC tester, and only had one wire at the particular time. The circuit was broke, but you're still getting a signal, an AC signal, through that transformer, through the whole system. That AC signal didn't stop just because there was a wire missing. It just continued to go. And as it did, it was able to be picked up with another device. You could register that it was, that somewhere along the line there was an AC signal being pumped in there. This pulse DC circuit. DC is a really powerful punch when it comes to induction whenever you want to produce a magnetic field. Because of the windings in there and how tightly wound they are, and you're moving, according to the electron theory, you're moving electrons around, you're realigning everything, and the more turns you got on there, the stronger that electromotive force becomes, and so on. Well, I honestly believe that with the right engineering, you could take off-the-shelf transformers like these ones that you see in the video, and you could build the most powerful electric motor in the history of time just by understanding how that energy is actually moving. When I was running the other experiments, when I first got this circuit, and I had to keep adding transformers, because the output of this deal was at the wrong frequency range, and the inverter that I was trying to run off of the system kept getting an overload signal. And so I had to weaken the signal down by adding another transformer. I had 7 transformers connected to 1 circuit and ran it all day long, and it never got hot. And that's the key. Every single material under the sun has a thermal breakdown point. Once it reaches that thermal breakdown point, it will fail. And so if you understand how energy is actually traveling, and you allow it to flow freely as opposed to being hindered, once it meets resistance, then the resistance produces friction, which in turn produces heat and causes parts to fail. All these losses in every single system, including the internal combustion engine, are only due to a lack of understanding of how energy is being used. It's that simple. Folks, this isn't rocket science. It could be. We could actually use the basic laws of physics and basic science to actually produce a rocket, because we understand how to use chemistry and pressure and all kinds of different things. I'm entitling today's show Energy Now, because if the world wants it, it's available right now. I'm only one man. I can't go around and build a generator for everybody and his brother and then some, which I wish I could, because I would. And I failed to mention earlier, if you are listening in and you want to meet some really nice folks, run over there to People for People Radio. Go over and say hi to those people. Jump over there to TCT room. If you want to meet up with a lot of good people, jump over there in the chat rooms, the superchat.html. There's 4 separate chat rooms. And go over there and hang out with the People for People Radio show. All these networks that we keep bringing together, trying to show the world solutions to problems that exist in the world, it's it's a lot more work than meets the eye. Most of the folks behind the scenes that do all this stuff, they're volunteering. They're taking their time to try to put positive information out to the world to make this world a better place. Go ahead and say hi to them. So, energy now, what's it mean? It means that quite literally free energy is here right now. It has been all along, but pointing it out, I can say with perfect confidence that my theoretical words aren't going to be debunked by anybody. Doesn't matter. It's not possible for them to debunk real science. Scientific observation. Now, I've had people say that they don't want to talk to me no more because they think I'm crazy. All right, well, sorry. I didn't mean to drive you away thinking I'm crazy or anything. But what I refuse to do is to stand inside the box. I will not stand inside the box. Been in the box all my life. I studied science since I was a child. Read so many books and studied so many different subjects. And then later on in life, only to be told something contrary to what I learned. So what are you saying? That I have to go back and relearn everything now? Because now you're saying that something is happening that, according to the science that you taught me in the past, wasn't possible? That's why I'm such a anti-global warming / anti-climate change / anti-climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the math doesn't add up. That's why mad science exists, because when the industries of the world are quite literally stealing from the people, and when the governments of the world are quite literally stealing from the people, all the energy industries out there, they took something out of the ground. Sure, they had to pay for machinery and they had to pay for employees to dig something out of the ground. And then they turned around and produced energy with the energy that they dug out of the ground, and then they turned around and sell it to you. Don't make no sense. You can buy bottled water over here in the United States sometimes as low as a dollar, but I've actually seen it higher. I want you to think about that for a second. A dollar for a bottle of water. Think about it. No, I'm serious. Sit down and honestly contemplate on what I just said. We're told that our earth is 3/4 covered in water. There's more water on this planet than we could ever drink in a trillion, 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 whatever the heck is higher than that, quadrillion, into infinity and beyond. Water is the most stable, most abundant molecule on the face of the earth. You're 3/4 water. Your body. And when you drink water, it just does its job. It gives you the energy necessary to run your body and is recycled right back into the system. You can't get rid of it. It is physically impossible to get rid of it, according to science. And yet you're paying a dollar a bottle. And yet, there are people in this world that can't even get a clean glass of water to drink. Now, understandably, this is why somebody who studied science all his life gets upset. When people in this world have to die of thirst because of greed and stupidity. If you're standing next to the ocean and you're dying of thirst and you didn't pay attention in science class, literally. The governments of this world are talking about, oh, well, our next problem's going to be, water shortages and stuff. And you got California out there during a drought hollering about how, you got to pull up your lawn and gravel your front yard because we can't afford the water to water your lawn. Are you freaking kidding me? California has a huge body of water right next to it. And I am just dumbfounded every single time I listen to some of the idiotic things that the governments of this world say. And it really overwhelms me when I hear some of the ignorance of the idiotic things that some of the governments say being repeated by the people. It is ridiculousness on a biblical scale. If you've never seen the movie Idiocracy, that's what I feel like I'm watching. Because people in this world need to be cared for. And we have the energy right now. We have it. And with a little bit of ingenuity and some brilliant minds coming together, we could seriously sit down and engineer together some extremely efficient machines, some powerful, wonderful things that would do amazing things. And I'm just a voice shouting out into the pipeline saying, hey, over here, I found it, man, I got the idea. Come on, let's get together and build it, you know? And I've been called everything under the sun for that. You just don't understand. You just can't contemplate what it feels like inside my head to see a solution right in front of everybody out there. And yet they will follow some people out there as if, and some people actually even claim that they were the Messiah. You know, Cashy the Crook. He's out there basically taking people's money and promising them the sun and the moon. And I'm not promising people the sun and the moon. I'm promising you that if you bring your brilliant mind with me, we together will engineer things that will function and give the world the free energy that they deserve. And this journey that I've been on hasn't been an easy one, because it's like coming back in time from hundreds if not thousands of years in the future and trying to find parts for your equipment that haven't even been invented yet. And so here I am, I'm showing you this one circuit right here, and I'm saying to you that this circuit puts out a DC pulse that is incredibly efficient and powerful. And with the right minds, you can take multiples of these circuits and build a really extremely powerful motor generator that could very potentially run itself. Because of the energy that is produced off of there is more than you're putting in. Everybody thinks, well, that sounds fantastic. Of course it sounds fantastic, because you've been told all your life that it's not possible. But after observing, using scientific observation on how magnetic fields travel through transformers and how it travels through the electrical wire that we've got and the things, the dangers of it, all the different anomalies, the ways that it produces heats and the terminology for it all. You know, you got eddy currents, little whirlpools of magnetic field trying to find a place to go. They ain't got nowhere to go, so basically this keeps spinning right there and get hot. You got the cogging effects, the lens effect that they talked about, you know, where when you induce a current in a coil of wire, it produces a current in the opposite direction. And why would that happen? Two reasons. One is the pressure has nowhere to go, And two is you're putting energy back down the same pipe that you're trying to draw energy from the moment you turn that light bulb on. And so I paid attention to everything that was going on. I figured out why it was going on. What's happening in the plumbing? Looking at electricity in a mechanical fashion as opposed to like what the book tried to tell you. Electricity isn't the only thing. It's just the most important thing to me at this point, because everybody's talking about clean, renewable, alternative energy. 140 watt solar panel has the capabilities of doing so much more than what it does right now. And the efficiency of that particular solar panel can actually get higher. If energy is used properly, you would be surprised at how much more work that you can get done for less input than you're putting in. There's guys out there on YouTube doing some pretty cool things, showing you different things with like Ludic Science doing that flyback driver for only two components in this entire deal. To you know, transistor, actually a MOSFET. I think it was an IRFZ 44 or an IRF 3205 MOSFET. Basically, it's transistor. And all it is, folks, look, when I say MOSFET and transistor, people's like, oh, what's that? You know, it's a switch. It's the light switch on your wall. That's it. A rotary switch, a light switch, an any switch. The whole deal is what the transformers and the coils are looking for is the change in the magnetic field, changing this way and that, like shaking the water up in your glass. You know, if you sit there and you have a glass of water and you rock it back and forth and you see that change back and forth, that's all that transformer's looking for. And that interaction is what's producing the electricity that we use to run our appliances and such. When you're rubbing your hair on a balloon, you're doing the same exact thing. You're taking that energy force and you're moving it back and forth, and it's producing a charge, and that charge needs a place to go. And it's exchanging electrons according to the electron theory. And nature always wants to be balanced out. And so as nature pushes back, that force is used to do mechanical work. It's so ridiculously simple. I'm not sure how to bring the world together. That's the hard part. We need a negotiator out there. We need somebody to go out and find the brilliant minds and point them in the same direction. It's hard in the world of science, though. Because the mainstream scientists, they got a different agenda than what mad science has got, that's for sure. They want to keep their grants so they won't step outside the box. So that makes them not very good for the dream team. We need people that want to see how far things can go. We need people that want to try to test things. You know, use real observation. Try it. Try it before you deny it, kind of deal. Those are the folks I need to get to the table. But either way, I'm going to take this particular circuit right here, and I'm going to take it to its maximum limitations. I'm going to see how far I can push this one circuit. I'm really impressed with it because, like I said, it doesn't get hot after I've ran it for hours and hours and hours on end. Normally, transistors, that's why they have heat sinks on them, they would have gotten hot. But the reason why the transistors and MOSFETs are getting hot is because the energy that they're capable of producing is pushing into the circuit, and then is being forced back into the same circuit, producing resistance, which is causing it to have to work harder and get hotter. So that means that if you allow that energy to come up out of these transistors and it is not hindered, and you allow it to go out and pressurize any container, it's like you fill up as many containers as you want, like capacitors. Imagine a conveyor belt full of capacitors, and as this thing has come and charging, pushing that energy out of these transistors, every time one of these capacitors comes by, it fills it up. And then goes to the next one, fills it up. So this thing never has to work hard. It's constantly letting that energy flow in one direction, and it's filling up all these containers. And now you have pressurized stored energy in abundance. If anything in any circuitry is getting hot, that means it's getting too much power. The opposite was said, that it's drawing too much power is why it's getting hot. No, it's not. It's not drawing too much power. The energy, as it travels through there, if it's allowed to travel freely, the transistors will actually switch on and switch off without ever getting hot, as long as that energy has a place to go. In the transformers, the size of that transformer doesn't even compare to the size of the magnetic field that is produced once this circuit pulses. Once any circuit pulses. That's why if you actually take a coil of wire, any coil you got, any transformer, if you take the two wires and you connect them on the terminals of a battery, once you tap them down on her, you'll note that the power is already jumping to the wire before you actually get it connected. And then when you hold down on there, now you've got a current induced inside this coil that has produced pressure, and the moment you release that pressure, it snaps back with a vengeance. The battery's pressurized and the coil is pressurized, and you get an arc across the terminals. If you just leave the wires connected, then the pressure on the positive plates and the pressure on the negative plates have a path to go across to each other, and that battery will balance itself out and be considered a dead battery. Still has as much potential when it's dead as it did when it was full. It's just that now it's in perfect balance. That's what nature does. So you pressurize that battery by putting more power on one terminal than on the other terminal, then that wants to balance itself back up until you make a path for it to get to the other side, then that battery will hold a charge. It's like a capacitor. So once you understand just the basic simples of energy, now the big key is, how do you get this energy now to the people? Yo, that's all good. How am I going to run my house with that, Shaziz? But first off, start by running your house more efficiently. Go around and feel the plugs and find out what parts are getting hot and which parts aren't getting hot. There's a lot of house fires because of electricity, because they're drawing too much. Too much power being shoved into that house, and it's not able to handle it. You're asking too much from the wires. If there's a path, too many paths, then you got a lot of power running through that wire. It's all trying to get to the other side. and then things get too hot. They reach the thermal breakdown. There's a concept out there called cold electricity. I'm about to Google that up. Let me just jump over here on Google and type in cold electricity. See what Wikipedia says about it. I don't like Wikipedia. They got an agenda. Anyway, what is cold electricity? Can't believe Wikipedia ain't got a doggone article on cold electricity. But there is a energy forum. Let's just see what they got to say over there. Okay, Somebody named Wayne said, let's imagine a simple circuit composed of a battery, a CRSR, current sense resistor, and a resistor for a load, a simple DC circuit. You hook the circuit up for a few seconds later and the load resistor is hot. The CSR is hot and the battery is getting warm. Pick some different components up, hook them up. The load resistor gets hot, but the battery and the CSR stay cool. You can't feel them getting warmer, and your thermometer seems to tell you nothing is changing the temperature-wise in regards to the battery and the CSR. Probably half of the... Half of you out there know exactly what this is leading to. I'm not aiming this at you. This is for the readers that come on this forum. I want to do what you are doing, but I don't know anything about electricity or electronics. All I know is Tesla was a genius and discoverers have been lost. Whatever. Yikes. Anyway, cold electricity. Go out there and Google it up. But imagine being able to use the same devices without having anything get hot. The frequency range at which you run things, the energy is either moving too slow or too fast. If it's moving too slow, then it will obviously cause resistance. If it's moving too fast, then it will always it will obviously cause resistance. There's a sweet point in there somewhere. Somewhere along the line is a sweet point to where you can get the energy moved from point A to point B without causing all the resistance. And that's pretty much what causes all the problems and everything, is that you're trying to push too much energy into a system, and the energy needed to run something, you don't need that much. That's what I've been trying to say. This little circuit right here, we'll run off a 12-volt system and under 1 amp. And if you see what it does inside the videos right there, that's pretty doggone impressive as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, we got the capabilities right now to quite literally design really super efficient equipment. So I'll put the call out to anybody out there who wants to get together and work on some projects. And put them out there for the public. I need to I need to take a breather. Let's see here. All right, folks. Been like a really super long night. I'm going to take a quick breather and take a music break. I was expecting somebody to show up today, but I guess maybe they forgot the show. But if you're listening in and you want to join in on the show, then yeah, I could always use a second pair of lungs. Peace and love, everybody.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Oh, my.
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, can you describe the ruckus? So I'm telling everybody that essentially we have all the energy necessary to get a lot of work done. And so, the deal that you have out there in the alternative energy world is they're looking for, I'm not exactly sure what exactly they are looking for. Basically, they're looking for the golden unicorn or something like that. You know, they're looking for this mythological creature that may or may not existed in the history of time. And those who actually stumble upon something that is so incredible, like Stan Myers and John Bedini and Tesla and all these different researchers out there that addressed the so-called energy needs of the world. And they always met the same doggone resistance, the same greed, the same craziness. You know, a lot of times the average Joe is their worst enemy when it comes to trying to preserve their own freedom. It blows me away because I'm sure that, you know, even at my age, somebody went to school the same time I did. Somebody had to have studied the same science that I studied. Somebody has to have the same understanding mechanically of how things actually function. I can't be the only one who sees how ridiculously simple it is for us to be able to get energy and use it incredibly efficient. You know, hunting and picking through different deals and testing, if I find a new device or something like that, I will take it and I'll put electricity to it and I'll test it out. There's a guy out there on YouTube, I think his YouTube channel is Photo Induction. And this guy, I don't know where he works, but he must have access to some really cool high voltage equipment, because he's got his own, basically his own version of a mad science lab, where actually he goes and blows up stuff. He'll see how much power that a electric motor can actually withstand before it catches on fire. But as watching one of his videos yesterday, and I'm watching inside these electric motors while he's putting too much power to them, and you literally see inside the engine or inside the motor where the contacts are on the commutator in there are glowing white with plasma. The energy that is being produced inside that electric motor is amazing. See, everybody thinks that it's the energy that he's putting in that's actually doing all the work, but it's not the case. When you induce a current into a coil of wire, you produce pressure inside there. And if you keep on cramming it in there at a higher rate of speed, a higher frequency, that voltage will continue to rise. It'll keep on rising and rising, and any atmosphere that would be inside there would be energized into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, which is basically heat. Light and heat. And it will quite literally match the thermal breakdown of any material and destroy it. It catch fire. And so if you pay attention to those little anomalies that are going on when people are doing things like that, when they're putting things in the microwaves and destroying them, and you look at it with a scientific point of view and observation, what just occurred on that? Sure, we knew it blew up. You put too much power to it, it blew up, all right? I get all that. But in energy, there is no wasted energy. There's only energy we don't use. For example, the internal combustion engine is really super inefficient. And it generates more power than it actually gets credit for. I've said this I don't know how many times. I want somebody to do the math. I want somebody to take an internal combustion engine and do the math. Run that engine at its normal operating temperature. Measure all the heat from the radiator to the block, to the exhaust, every section of that deal. Measure the pressure of the exhaust coming out of the pipe. Measure any radiant energy coming off of any coils from the alternator or the starter or whatever. Everything that that engine's doing from start to finish, measure every single bit of energy that is going on. If there was ever a case for over-unity, I believe the internal combustion engine would be the one. You take away that radiator, that thing will generate enough heat to literally destroy itself. And if you plug up the exhaust, that energy has to go somewhere. And make some observations where it ends up. Too much pressure in your oil pan will blow your weakest points out, which would be the gaskets. You got an engine that has an amazing amount of torque because of the way that the energy is transferred from the engine to the transmission and able to utilize that energy properly. But nonetheless, the entire internal combustion engine, every single one of them out there on the market today, is engineered poorly. Otherwise, the efficiency of this particular engine would be off the scales. If an internal combustion engine is only 30% efficient, then that leaves a whole lot of room for improvement. Guys that come out there and invent a better fuel system, somebody buys up the information somebody shelves the information. Everybody knows that vapor will ignite faster than the liquid. Everybody knows that. Anybody who paid attention in science knows that. Yet the auto industry apparently does not know that. Sure, we got some pretty high-tech fuel injection systems, but they're not where they should be. Where they should be is so much further along where we're quite literally using sonic vaporization technology that is breaking that fuel down into its tiniest molecules before it goes into the combustion chamber, and the harder you push down on the gas pedal, the less fuel you should have to use. Because as that piston is racing up and down, the faster you're going, the faster that piston's going up, the shorter the time for the burn, and the less fuel you should be injecting into that cylinder. And for those mechanics out there that believe it's not possible to run a car on water, well, then you apparently haven't paid attention to, you know, all the properties of water. Sure, we know that a liquid can't be compressed. And so, you know, you have to turn it into a gas before you can compress it. That's basic science. I get it. Why can't the big wigs at the auto industries get it? And so you know how to literally take and change the state of water by heating it up. You preheat that water, you bring it up to 212 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level, and it will begin to boil. When you take it up higher than that, it will begin to turn to steam. And yet, even higher than that, it will flash into superheated steam. At this point in the game, it's no longer a liquid, it's a gas. And if you maintain that temperature inside the cylinder, then that will not flash back into water again. It will not condense. And it's still not a liquid. And if you maintain that temperature and the pressure, when you begin to crack the hydrogen and oxygen on demand, it will produce its own charge, which will be the ignition source. You got to have oxygen, you got to have a fuel source, and you have to have an ignition source. All of them are right there. Diesel engines, compression ignition technology has been around for a long time. Diesel engines don't have spark plugs. They use the compression. They use basically compressor technology. We know that when we compress a gas, it gets hot. And we know what we can do with the heat. So right now we should quite literally have engines that would run on whatever your favorite type of fuel is. Doesn't matter. And right now we should have transformers that are specifically designed to be so incredibly efficient to utilize the entirety of a magnetic field, the power that's in that magnetic field. It's incredible. Go out there and watch an electromagnet picking up a car. Go out there to Savage Yard and watch these super powerful electromagnets picking up a car. Picking up piles of iron, tons of iron. That should have been something to tell somebody something. That is a powerful force, electromagnetic force that we are able to generate. And think about this. You got a crane that's in the middle of a salvage yard that has a power plant on board that is able to produce a massive magnetic field, electromagnet, that is able to pick up big, giant chunks of steel. And you see big, giant chunks of steel dangling off of this chunk of steel, dangling off that chunk of steel. And that's a whole lot of power. See, we use the magnetic field to generate the electricity. And if you got a magnetic field that strong, then that means you can generate yet even more electricity by changing that field back and forth through a core, in inducing a current in a copper wires. And so how many of these transformers could you actually stack on top of each other? How far will that magnetic field actually travel? I believe it's unlimited. The only thing that transformer is looking for is a change in polarity. As the AC wave or pulse DC wave is coming in and out, it's rocking the electrons back and forth, producing yet an even stronger magnetic field, and that magnetic flopping back and forth is producing what we call electricity. So we're able to, if we really seriously want to make a super incredibly efficient electrical appliances, we don't have to use resistance for heat. We can use frequency ranges for heat. We can actually measure the the radio frequency necessary to take nickel and chromium wire, nichrome wire, that they use in space heaters and stuff to make the elements, and they also use tungsten in the space heaters to make elements inside there, the heating elements. The reason why they use nichrome wire and the tungsten wire for two separate types of elements is because of their resistance to current flow. That energy that you're going to shove through that wire, this is resisting that flow, producing the heat. But the same thing can be done with a frequency range. You vibrate this wire at its resonant frequency and it will glow red hot. It's so ridiculously simple, folks. So ridiculously simple. And if I could just get the right people to the table. That's all I'm saying. Let me see if I can get somebody in here. Well, hello there, lady.
Hey, give me just a second. Let me put things up. I'll be right back.
Alright. Anyway, like I was saying, folks, if I could just get the right individuals to the table, that's all I'm saying. See, I got an understanding of how to do these things. And my way isn't the only way, but it's one of the ways, and it's actual solution. And if you try these things that I'm showing you, take these circuits and try them out and see how far you can take it. See, this particular circuit that I've been talking about, it's basically a 12 volt to 220 volt AC inverter circuit, driver circuit. And I'm only using two legs off of it, so basically I'm just using the equivalence of 110 volts of the 220. But it's not the amount of voltage that is impressive about this. Is that I can pulse these transformers and never get these transistors hot, which tells me that it's not drawing too much power. So I reached out to the world and I told them on my YouTube channel on this deal. I said, you know, come over here and join me on Shaziz Radio and let's talk about all these things and troubleshoot ideas. And if there's something that you disagree with me, you know, let's open a dialogue. And trying to get my critics and my thumbs downers to come to the table. You know, if you're just gonna continuously criticize because you don't like my terminology or you don't like my explanation of how things work, here's a good idea. It's a novel idea. Come over there and show me how to do it properly. That's it. We get together, we talk, you show me, hey, look, you know, you've been using this wrench wrong all along, and this is how it actually is supposed to be used. Oh, cool, I just learned something. You learn something new every doggone day. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, old Snively Whiplash is taking the wallet out of Granny's purse for the electric bill, and I'm sitting there telling the world that, look, we got the answer right here. Alright, this is just one circuit out there that I've been talking about. It's, like I said, it's not the holy grail of free energy. Energy's already been free. It's how you use it that's going to make the difference. But I'm trying to find things that are actually on the store shelf so that if we build a device together, troubleshooting and engineering a device together, that your average Joe could actually be able to do it. Without having to go out and spend thousands of dollars for a massive solar array or a massive windmill farm or whatever. The average Joe could invest a few bucks and take an old junky generator and use the copper windings that are already in there. Don't even have to modify it. Just send a signal to it and get this thing to do what it did when the engine was running on it. The alternator in your car, there's a book out there called Secrets of the Alternator. Look it up. In that book called Secrets of the Alternator, it talks about how much energy potential the alternator actually has in your car. You can get 120 volts AC out of a AC Delco alternator just by pulling the diodes out of it and running it as an AC power source. But obviously your car engine and your electronics in your car are set up on a 12 volt system, so you don't want 120 volts AC running through your engine, so you through your electrical system, so you have to use a voltage regulator to ensure that the voltage stays down to 13.5 volts so that your battery remains charged but it doesn't overcharge. So it shuts it off. So a lot of time your alternator is just sitting there spinning. It's not doing nothing. It's it whenever you start pulling a load on it, that's when the engine starts to bog down on you a little bit, and the alternator's working hard, your engine's working harder because of the way that you're using that energy. What if I said you should never shut that alternator off? And you should be pulling the energy off in a different fashion than what you're doing right now, so that whenever you always have a storage of power. But I don't know what it is. I honestly don't know what it is that something that should be so ridiculously simple catches so much grief from so many different directions. The mainstream scientists of this world, they remind me of ostriches. The ones where you see those pictures where the ostrich has their head in the sand and the world's going on around the outside. Well, as long as my head's in here, I don't see nothing happening out there. I'm not worried about it.
Hey, Susan.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm going to just add some. I don't know how good my Skype is going to be.
Sounds great for the moment.
Cool. Let's leave it at that. But you know what? I haven't had a chance to see your third video on Question. I know it's there in my subscriptions, but I haven't been able to get to it yet. But as far as the scientists and stuff go, they're not paid to think outside the box, which is, and they're not, they don't have the desire anymore to even go there because they don't get paid to do that. They get ridiculed to do that. And you know how that is.
Oh, yeah.
And in a university setting, you don't even have that option. In a university, when you're studying any types of energy, it comes to you. These are the grants. These are the endowments. And it comes from this energy company, or it comes from this government, and this is what they're paying for. So if that's what you're going to study, and that's where you're going to go with your science. You know, they're in this channel, a very thin line of science that is really antiquated.
If it doesn't fit within the accepted parameters of what they already put down ahead of them, then they don't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, they can't bring a paycheck for that, you know. They have to do what that energy company is going to pay that grant for. And the university is going to promote what that grant is for and for the government grants and stuff that they get. Because that's how they survive, these universities. They have to have money coming in. And so these science departments and all, they're geared to whatever the corporations and the government got going at the time. And if you're not in that little box there, and you try to step out of it, then, and if you compete, oh my gosh, if you're doing something over in this department that is competing with this conglomerate's grant money over here, they're going to shut you down.
Yeah.
Because they can't risk making that grant disappear, you know?
I think that's why I'm trying to appeal to the average Joe, you know? The backyard scientist. Those are the ones I'm looking for.
That's the thing, is that they are there, but it's just getting them all together. You know, you know as well as I do, you've sent me links to a lot of great people on YouTube.
Yep.
Who have done a lot of great things, and there are many, many, many. I just saw one in my subscriptions as I was coming on, dealing with a little, if I had your mind, I could tell you exactly what he had there. But let me see if I can get to, I want to read the caption because you'll know exactly. It says, 3-volt DC motor forced at 4,000 volts.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the thing. See, that when you take a small voltage like that, you can take that small voltage and you can amplify it up so much just by understanding how to pulse a coil. When you take just a little 9-volt battery and you hook it to a voltmeter and you keep your finger on that thing, when you close that down and it pressurizes that coil, the moment you lift up on there, if you read the voltage that comes up out of that coil, not only are you going to get the crud shocked out of you, but you'll see the voltage spike on that voltmeter like you wouldn't believe. I mean, up in the hundreds of volts, depend on how fast you do it. And it's just turning that switch. That's what Tesla showed everybody. That behind the scene, when you got all this energy waiting in line to come through there, that energy is pressurized. And it's the moment you open the gate, it rushes in like a flood. And once that flood rushes in and levels itself out, then the voltage will smooth out to whatever the current flow is available that's coming in there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like if I had a swimming pool full of water outside my front door, You know, and the moment I open that door, all that water just comes flying in, right? And then when the water fills up the rooms, it kind of just levels itself out and everything's back to balance again. That's exactly how electricity works. And so 3 volts all the way up to 1,000, 4,000 volts, it's so easy to understand.
Not for some of us, Jesus. That's why we need you.
I'm trying to make it as simple as possible, but if people are listening in out there, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand this. Just go out and watch water. All right, go down your streams and watch how water travels. Nature, it's so brilliant. If you can sit there and you can see physically, observe how water is spinning around in circles over here, and it's going up over here. You will see electricity by watching water. They work the same way. They pressurize the same way. They have the same exact characteristics as far as how mechanically they function. You know, it's like, how many people have ever put the thumb over a garden hose and caused the pressure to squirt way across the deal and squirt your brother or sister with the water hose? Right?
Yeah.
That's electricity. And the faster you sit there and do that, and if you take that water hose and you wave it up and down and you can actually see a wave of water going up and down, that's electricity. It's doing the same thing. And how fast you're doing that is the actual frequency something's happening. And by doing it faster, you get a really massive reaction. That's the same thing with voltage. It's so incredibly simple.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
That's not directly along those lines, but sort of along those lines. The lightning will always seek out water. Or, if there's water underground or something, won't lightning be attracted to that flow of water?
Well,
is there a relationship between energy within water that is...
Water is a dipole molecule, which means it has a positive and a negative, just like a magnet. So you could actually look at a water molecule like a little miniature magnet, all right? And anything to do with electricity and magnetism go hand in hand. And we use magnetism to actually produce waves and other things that are able to be magnetized or demagnetized or whatever. We're just using that magnet to cause waves. Right, and that waves is producing a reaction, which is producing energy. So all that power that's inside that lightning bolt is related to magnetism. And so if there's an opposite magnetic charge anywhere than what that lightning bolt is, it's going to attract to it. And it's always going to take the shortest path to ground as well. And so... once you understand all that, it's...
But water can't act like a battery, can it? It can't hold a charge.
No.
It can take a charge and disperse it.
Water's the most stable molecule on the planet. So even when you put it in your microwave and you boil that water in your microwave, it usually takes about 2 minutes to boil water in a microwave. And so once those molecules get to vibrating, when you pull it out and that water is sitting there still boiling, that means those water molecules haven't had the opportunity to slow down, but they will eventually come to rest, and that temperature will drop down and the water will be whatever the temperature is of the room after that
point. Because it's releasing that energy.
Yeah.
Is it? Right. Maybe that's the purpose of why lightning seeks out water conduits in order to transfer energy, to disperse energy.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, wouldn't lightning be blowing big holes in things? I mean, in the ground and things like this, which I guess it does every now and then. But if it's a tree...
Yeah, there's...
Maybe I may be getting off topic here, aren't I?
Now, have you ever heard of a fulgurite?
Not really.
A fulgurite is like when lightning hits sand, it superheats the sand and turns it into glass. If that's how much power is in a lightning bolt. And we can produce lightning bolts on a microscopic scale. Static electricity is a lightning bolt. All this energy that around it, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about static electricity, AC current, or DC current. It's all the same thing. It's all the same stuff. It's all related to magnetism, and it's all related to electricity. Well, we just got these names for them, electricity and magnetism. But what the actual force is, who knows what the actual name of the energy that surrounds every single object out there. See, right now, where we're sitting, we're literally floating in a sea of water. We're in an ocean right now, you and me. We're breathing oxygen and all this kind of stuff. It's like we're not actually under the liquid form of water. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
all the molecules that make up water is in the atmosphere. The hydrogen and the oxygen is vaporized into, you know, it's two separate components and floating around out here. We're in a gaseous state. We're actually floating in a gas. And there's so much energy that surrounds us, it's just mind-blowing. If you was to ever realize what the potential of tapping into just the atmosphere alone, then what you're talking about, the lightning bolts, you know, when you got a thermoelectric generator, which is the Earth, everything for thermoelectricity, you know, if you take any two dissimilar metals and you heat them up, as long as there's a temperature difference in there, you get what they call the Seebeck effect, which is, you know, the electrons change in places because these two metals are at different temperatures. And they use that particular effect to make the Peltier element. So you keep one side hot, you keep the other side cold, and you got an electrical flow. Well, in the Earth, because of, you know, seismic activity, you know, all the geology of the Earth itself, the different minerals and the different metals and the temperatures is always producing energy, and that energy has to go somewhere. And yeah, and in the air, you got ice crystals slamming into each other. You got hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, and whatever other gases are in the air, that these are all smacking into each other constantly, producing yet even more energy. So we're floating in so much doggone energy, it's ridiculous. And the thing that most people don't even contemplate is your body needs this energy in order to keep moving. We sugars or carbohydrates to produce the energy to produce electricity inside of our body, which ironically enough has iron in it, you know. And so with these chemical reactions going on in our body, we're literally capacitors and batteries, you know, and we are electrical beings, literally.
You know, well, we have many metals inside our bodies too. Some at a very, very trace level, but still, like gold is enormously conductive, right?
Yeah, it's good. It's the best conductor.
Yeah.
Outside of a superconductor. And the only thing a superconductor is that if you bring something to the right temperature, then its resistance gets down to such a ridiculous level that you can move this energy through there. See, that's the whole process. When we're moving energy, the resistance is what causes things to get hot. If you can move energy without the resistance, you can have electronics that would never fail. They would never reach the thermal breakdown. They'd never fail. That's the reason why your body is you know, regulated at 98.6 degrees, because if anything more than that, you start to cook. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, but now you know why you don't have electronics that will last, because they can't do that, Shaziz. I mean, you can't have free energy in a world that makes its money and profit off of selling energy, you know?
Yeah, and it's a shame, because you know, here we are in the year 2018. We should be so much more technologically advanced than what we are. I mean, I know the governments are, and I know the corporations are. They've got the cool toys and the cool technology, but they don't put it out there. It's like they don't sell you the iPhone 6 until all the iPhone 5s are sold, you know? So, right. You know, the iPhone 6 has got a camera in it, and the iPhone 5 didn't, and you paid, what, $300 to $600 for the first one, and you're going to have to pay $300 to $600 for the next one, and they'll tell you, well, you know, it's so we can do, you know, more research and build better ones. Well, they've already got better ones.
I think they're like $1,000 now, phones.
Don't surprise me.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy, the technology, and you know that phone next year is going to be obsolete.
Yeah.
You know, and with that phone comes so many tag-alongs, you know, like the government.
Yep.
You know,
spying in on you, marketing to you. My advice to everybody out there, right now, like this circuit that I'm talking about, there should be a run on these. People should get out there on doggone eBay and find the companies that are selling these, find the best buy on them, and buy these things up while you can, because, you know, technology, the older technology gets, the harder it is to find, and if you find something that works, you know, eventually it's going to become obsolete, you know, unless you can replicate this, you know, in your own lab. These circuits are priceless. I mean, I went out and bought me some more of them. I'm going to buy yet even some more of them, because if you watch the videos that I did, coil driver 1 and 2, and you see what I'm doing with them, and then you follow it all the way up to this last video that I put up there called Energy Now, and you see what I'm doing with it there, folks, I'm telling you, there is more energy potential in these transformers than people realize. There's more energy potential in any electrolytic battery than people realize. You don't need that amount of power to do the work that you do. That there's so much power available in a battery that it's mind-blowing. If I say something crazy like you can run an entire city off of one small 12-volt car battery, people would look at me like, oh, you're just nuts. But it's not. It's not. It's how you pulse that. I took this circuit right here, and I was able to send a signal, and that's all it was looking for. That's all that primary coil was looking for, was a signal. Expanding and collapsing of the magnetic field. Well, the magnetic field, when you want to talk about eddy currents, is because you got all these little currents going on inside this metal, because this metal is now being magnetized and this energy is still coming in and ain't got nowhere to go, so it's getting hot. And I was able to stack a transformer on top of a transformer on top of a transformer, and I could continue to run these things in series all day long for as much wire as I could get a hold of, and pulse that same deal through there, and that magnetic field would go and it would magnetize all the cores, and any change in those cores would cause that current to flow on the other side.
Are you talking about the Bendini?
Well, the Bendini motor's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But the microwave oven transformers, these cores, when you magnetize one core, that magnetic field doesn't stop there. It goes right into the next core, and then the next core. And there's things you can see in this video that I put out there called Energy Now. I pick it up with the top core. I pick it up with my two fingers. But once I have this circuit on, I'll click it on to see if you can hear this humming going on. Can you hear that hum?
Yeah.
Well, that is how strong that magnetic field is. I can't pick it up with my two fingers because it literally produced an electromagnet strong enough to basically bond those two cores together.
Wow.
And it's all, these transistors aren't even getting hot, so that means they're running incredibly efficient. And I'm not even running this circuit the way it was actually meant to run. I'm only running it off of two of the legs, so I still have more energy potential available in this circuit than what I'm using right now.
And what's the output of it?
It's hundreds of volts. You know, and here's the thing. when I tell everybody that I don't care about current watts and amps, there's a reason why I keep saying that, because voltage is pressure. And at voltage, you like, for example, I could register 98 volts on my voltmeter at 60 hertz or 50 hertz, and my voltmeter's fine. I tried the same doggone experiment at several hundred hertz, and my voltmeter registered 98 and then burn up. All right.
So the pressure creates voltage. The more pressure, the more voltage, or is it just
the faster the wave, the higher the voltage.
Okay.
Yeah, and that voltage is pressure. So if you're sitting there constantly pumping in a really super fast wave, that voltage is going to continue to rise. As long as there's a place for that energy to go, it's going to continue to rise.
Until, so it's like an oscillation, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, quite literally. You're on your way to creating a lightning bolt. That's what Tesla showed with the Tesla coil, was that, you know, he took the primary coil and he pulsed a magnetic field, a wave, and the wave would go up the secondary and then start building that pressure up the secondary, but it never gave the secondary time to balance back out. It kept pushing the wave up further and further and further until finally all that energy built up on the top load, that big old circular, looked like a donut thing on the top, and then all that energy's up there and it's looking for a place to go. It ain't got nowhere to go, and so it starts to ionize all the gas in the air or atmosphere around it and literally creates its own path to the nearest ground, which if you're standing around may very well be you.
Right. So yes, and it's always looking for that ground, isn't it?
Yeah.
Energy will always travel to ground.
That's right. It will always try to find or seek a path to ground, and that's what lightning is quite literally doing. The atmosphere up in there is so highly charged positively, and the ground is negatively charged, and of course we know opposites attract, and so, you know, when that power gets over there and it's able to literally ionize the air between the earth and the ground, you get a lightning bolt. See, the whole key is that energy needs a path. It needs a conductive path. We call it conductive, but, you know, whatever the actual deal is, it needs a gate to be opened up, essentially.
And when you see lightning, the processes are, that's the end result of the, it does not, lightning doesn't, like the energy is there, and it's looking for ground, and as soon as it finds that ground, that's your bolt.
Yeah. Nature's trying to find a place to balance it out.
And,
you know, I call lightning nature's tree trimmer, because, you know, if a forest gets overgrown, a lightning bolt hit down in there, get a little forest fire, cleans up everything, and basically rejuvenates it. Isn't that amazing how, like, have you ever been in an area that there was, like, at one point in time, a massive forest fire, and then you come back a year or so later, and you look, and this place is so beautiful, it's just mind-blowing?
Right, yeah. But what that means, though, to me, and being a layman and not having any real electrical science or anything like that behind me, just listening to you and everything, that it's the same thing, that if you provide the channel, if you can design and provide the channel for the energy to be dispersed, and that's what energy is always looking for.
Yeah,
it's always looking for that place to send that charge, to disperse it, for it to go someplace.
Yeah.
So if you have, that's what Tesla was doing, right? He was taking the energy that is naturally in the air around us and channeling it through the machine, like the one in your picture here behind you.
Yep. He was just showing the world how we can literally guide energy from one place to the next. When you think about a radio wave, kind of like what's going on right now, if I'm talking on my computer, you know, I'm sending an acoustic wave out to a piezoelectric speaker, which is vibrating, producing a little electric current, and sending that down through the computer and the processor, and then out through the lines, and then over repeater systems, and to another system, and then back to another repeater. Tesla showed that you could literally transmit electricity just like you would be transmitting information wirelessly, and somebody on the other side would pick that wave up, and the oscillation off of that wave would literally do the reverse reaction, producing electricity on the other side.
So we know why, but I'm going to put the question out there anyway. Science, why hasn't science caught up to this and utilized this? Like you say, I mean, energy is limitless.
Yeah.
There's no beginning or end to it. It's there all the time. You can't use it up.
I gave the example about just the water alone. There is no physical possible way outside of somehow, something stripping every single drop of water off of this planet that we could ever run out of water. It's not possible. Water is the most stable molecule. You can drink gallons and gallons and gallons of water all day long. Everybody on this planet could drink gallons and gallons of water all day long, and we would never, ever run out of water because the system takes that most stable molecule, it recombines it, puts it back into the system, cleans it back up, and takes any impurities out, and then you drink more of the water. It's mind-blowing that not only is water the most stable molecule on the planet, it can also be the most destructive and the most powerful fuel source in the history of time, and nature uses it all day long. I mean, look at how canyons and waterfalls and how everything is just continuously being stirred up and mixed around and refreshed and stuff like that. And even lightning has its place in the deal. And water, if you go back and look at the Lord Kelvin generator, it was basically as water falls down through, it produces a static charge, and you're able to pick the static charge up and produce a little miniature lightning bolt across this spark gap.
So, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
The same principle would be with gases.
Yeah.
And heat, like from a volcano. It's why we see lightning, right?
Yeah.
Whenever volcanoes are erupting, that energy that they're giving off is concentrating right above there. That's why there's lightning.
Yeah. It's just looking for a place to go.
Yeah. That energy has to go. It has to have a place, and it'll always seek the place of least resistance, right?
Yeah.
So there you go. There's the principles of free energy right there.
That's it. That's what I've been shouting out as loud as I can. I don't always have the proper terminology for people to understand. I try to pad it out as simple as possible, but I see this world as I'm looking at the internal workings of a clock. I can see it mechanically, everything, how it functions. And I'm sitting here telling people, look, this is so ridiculously simple. Somebody one time said that if free energy was ever discovered, that it would be the most simplest explanation. Well, it is.
There you go.
Well, that's all I think.
I have to say that you've been my teacher, so the fact that I understand what I do understand is amazing to me. And the more I listen to you, the more I understand. And I haven't, like I said, I haven't had a chance to watch this new video of yours. I've watched the one where you took two negatives and created energy, two negative poles, and still was able to create an abundance of energy.
They said they said that wasn't possible. How do you get something out of two negatives? And I have somebody come on there and says, I gotta admit, you got me on this one. I have no idea. And, when I first did it, I told you I blew that high voltage diode up. I mean, that thing sounded like a shotgun going off. I was dumbfounded. I'm like, what in the heck just happened? Because never have I ever connected two negative posts of a battery, even separate batteries together, and got a violent reaction like that. But the frequency range and how this energy was traveling, and one of the keys to what just occurred in there is in this last video where I show how I had my wireless AC tester And I showed that even though this circuit's not connected, there's only one wire connected. If the circuit's broke, unless you got the connection for the AC current to flow through, even with just one AC wire, I was able to register an AC signal in these transformers just because that one wire had been connected. Well, the way that Bedini circuit's working is working just like AC signal, and it's sending a wave out continuously. Even when this thing isn't, even when it's not even turned on, as long as that positive connected to what that one battery and there's a negative connected to an opposite battery, that energy and that wave is looking for a path to go.
Right. And that's the same principle, that you were talking about just a minute ago.
Yep.
The path of least resistance. And you provide the path.
This thing's running even when it's shut off because there's so much energy being interacted with it. Even the little molecules of hydrogen and oxygen and whatever else is in the room, dust, bouncing in and smacking into it. If you could actually see down on a microscopic scale of what's occurring, like there's certain times of the year where the air is really cool and you're really susceptible to static electricity, during the winter time or whatever. And you touch things and you shock yourself. Well, if you could actually see down on a microscopic scale what's going on, you got all these particles slamming into each other. You got little tiny ice crystals, and they're releasing their charge and they're exchanging electrons and stuff and producing energy. So even when things aren't running, there's still energy flowing in them.
Right.
All day long, every day.
Like my cats.
Yeah.
Winter time, shocking around me all the time.
Yeah.
And at nighttime, I can take my robe and if I've got it laying on my blanket, the lights are out. If I move that robe, I see the little miniature lightning bolts all over the place.
Yep. That's why I'm telling everybody, energy's all around us. It's free. I'm telling you, it's not that. People are always looking for the golden unicorn or something like that, and the mythological holy grail of whatever device is going to come on the scene, and I'm telling you, it's already here.
Well, they've been told for so long that there's no such thing as free energy. You can't, you've got to expend energy to get energy. Nobody teaches the principles that Tesla knew. Nobody's there to say, hey, wait a minute, I disagree. The current way of science is to boo-hoo anything that steps out of that normalcy that they've designed for energy. And like you, when you put those two videos up, with the getting the energy off of the two negatives and the people, you said the people, they had naysayers and stuff. It's because they can't conceptualize that you can get free energy because science tells us that's not possible.
Well, farmers have been getting free energy for years because they will take and dig a trench and they will reroute water to irrigate their crops.
Right?
Well, once that irrigation canal is dug, they don't pay for that water coming through there. There's energy right there,
Yep.
And so, that little simple concept, I can't run my house off of an irrigation canal. Well, I guess maybe you can because, what's the Bagnell Dam? They've been doing it for a while. And Niagara Falls.
It's producing energy. And friction is... Yeah, any type of friction, any type of flow, is going to, when you, especially like water, like you were talking about, water is a conduit for energy.
And it's also powerful. You could use water in hydraulics. You could use, water.
Pelton wheel.
Yeah. It's just, it's all about, understanding that according to science, we're not creating, we're not destroying energy. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. That's our own laws. All right. All we're doing is guiding it to wherever it is we want to go. And this little circuit that it's producing a pulse AC or pulse DC wave, and that DC wave is so incredibly powerful. But because I have an understanding of how that's actually functioning, I'm able to get amazing results out of it. And so I'm saying that if you could bring the right people to the table and run with this idea, go out. I mean, what do you got to lose? $5 for one of these little circuit boards, and you run some tests and see how many things that you can actually run on it and get an incredible efficiency. And then connect one of these up to a solar panel, direct to a little cheapo solar panel that is able to produce at least 1 amp of current. This doesn't even use a whole full amp. I was running it off of a 12 volt power supply that is good up to 1 amp.
Yeah, but you can't do that because I heard, Shaziz, that if you use solar panels, you're sucking all the energy out of the sun.
Well, I'll tell you what, I guess it is going to get mighty cold around here because I'm going to have to try it just to see if it works.
Yeah, that one senator, whatever he was, representative, that said you can't use those solar panel arrays because they'll take all the energy, they'll suck all the energy out of the sun.
Well, you'd think they'd want to do that because on one hand they're sitting there yelling about global warming, and what better way to cool the planet down by dimming the light of the sun, drain some energy off of your solar panels. And hey, we could slow down the wind too, man. That way we can get tornadoes. Everybody pop up a windmill.
Yeah.
Patty, the ridiculousness that you hear coming out of this world. That's why I call it mad science. And mad science is the key to the truth of free energy. The mainstream scientists can't get it done for some reason. They got their head in the sand, or they're scared. They don't want to do nothing. I'm not a mainstream scientist. I don't work for the man. I work for the people. And so with that said, if I got information, I'm sharing it with the people.
But you can vouch for the fact that there's no money not working for the man.
That's right.
That's why your science does not go that route, because these people go to college and they have to make sure that they get reimbursed for their cost, and they get their big house and they get their big energy SUV and all of these things, your status and everything. They're not going to step out of that box because it doesn't pay, Shaziz.
That's right.
Free energy doesn't pay. And if you're not going to pay me, then I'm going back to the old antiquated system of petrochemicals.
You hit on a key there, because when I told everybody free energy, if you notice, Shaziz ain't out here saying every time you come here on Saturdays for the Mad Science Channel, he's not saying, hey, donate to me, come on my YouTube and donate me, give me some money, I'm not, everything I do, it's coming out of my own pocket. I'm paying for the world's free energy out of my own deal, see?
Yeah.
I'm not asking for people. Only thing I'm asking for people is if you hear information that you believe and trust from this place, to share it. I must be stupid, Patty. How many people do you know that invest all their resources, their time and their effort and their money into a lost cause? If I didn't believe in free energy, why would I want to be sitting here every day, paying the doggone electric bill to the power company and the internet bill to the internet company and so on down the line? Why would I want to keep paying for this website and sitting out here, because it's all coming out of my pocket, If I didn't believe in what it is that I'm doing and the need for doing what it is that I'm doing, it would be so easy for me to walk away and be so, I could save a lot of money. You know? I could save a lot of hassle and a lot of time. But somebody told me that there were some people in this world that were starving. Alright? And because I got a big heart, I want to make sure that these people get some food. And when it comes to energy, and the understanding of how, you know, mechanically things work, I got a talent, a gift that, you know, I'm out here, I'm trying to share with the world, you know? So, if anybody is out there, you know, to criticize me, they really ain't got much to criticize on, because I don't see them putting money out of their pocket to do what it is that I'm doing, trying to share solutions with people. I'm not saying I'm like, huh?
The thing of it is that, you know, like Tesla and other people that have stepped up also, just like you. You've never been worried about money. That's why you can develop the things that you do. That's why your mind can see beyond these walls that society has put up, that science has put up, because you're not ruled by that monetary system. You don't have to keep your mind in this one little box, and you're not in it for the money. You're in it to be able to provide a way for people to exist. I've heard you talk so many times, your heart, it is so big. If you could, I know that you would help each and every individual that was out there in any way that you could. You've always been that way. And this is your way of helping. It's something that drives you. It's something that is who you are. It's not a hobby. It's not something that you just tinker with. This is who you are. That's the difference. Well, hey, Barry.
I appreciate that, Patty. How you doing, Barry?
Good, Shazis. How are you doing, guys?
Oh, pretty good. Got a lot of good things going on in my science lab, and I'm trying to share them with the world as usual. You know, I'm trying to give people the solutions that, you know, I think the world needs. At least they said they needed it.
Oh, boy, do they ever need it.
Yeah.
One of these days, they're all going to wake up and go, boy, we better make some changes quick, but I'm scared when it gets to that point. She says it might be a little too late.
Well, I'm hoping for the best.
I'm hoping that people really start to look at what's going on with our environment, because to me, that's the most important issue in my life right now. I'm trying to make people aware of exactly what's going on in our world as far as our biosphere, as far as our oceans, our animals, our species are going. So what we're talking about here is a way to completely stop all the damage that we're doing and reverse it and get rid of it.
Well, my question is, and I've put this shout out forever and a day, where's all the environmentalists that here at Shaziz Radio? You know, where are they at? I've been shouting out, hey, come over here. You guys want to save the planet? I got some ideas, and together we can, you know, make this happen, you know? Look, standing out in front of the doggone government buildings with a wooden stick and a paper sign ain't saving the trees. Seriously. You know?
You think there's a true environmentalist, somebody that really is dedicated to the environment, would be looking at every and any opportunity to offset what we're doing to the planet.
Yeah,
and
that's what I'm saying.
What you're doing here, the hydrogen cell alone. Why is the human race not embracing the hydrogen cell? The answer to all our problems right there. One simple little thing, and we could offset all the damage we're doing.
But yeah.
I think until people actually have their lives impacted in a large way, but what's going on, they're not going to do anything about it. They're just in their little matrix. They go to work. There's still food at the grocery store. Maybe the prices are going up, and there's still gas at the gas station. There's still money in the bank.
Well, that's why
I can turn around in a heartbeat.
That's why I continue to upload podcasts and videos. There's like 275 videos on my YouTube channel with ideas, and I put them out there in sometimes a humorous fashion and sometimes in just a creative fashion for a reason, because we all know what happens to people that talk about free energy. We've been down that road before. So I put it out here in a unique way, but there's 275 videos up there, and so you know, they're pretty much forever immortalized in the digital cyberspace, and so eventually maybe somebody will get around to seeing it and it'll spark an idea in their head, but nonetheless, they're there. The podcasts are up there, all the things that we've put out there for people, you know, alternative medicines and alternative materials and stuff, they're in those podcasts, you know. And so maybe somewhere down along the line, this you know, it's kind of like that Johnny Appleseed guy, you know, he's going around planting an apple, appleseed, he probably never get an apple off of that tree, never see the fruits of his own labor, but nonetheless he threw it out there so somebody else down the line is enjoying some really nice apples. You see what I'm saying? That's what it's all about for me, you know, because they said, well, there was a problem.
I've been in Prince Rupert here for the last couple of weeks doing work shifts.
Yeah.
I've gone 5 different locations on 5 different locations to check the low tide pools, to see what I can see in the way of life in the low tide pools. I went up to the coal terminal. I checked around Rupert itself. I went out to Metlakatla. I was over at another spot checking the low tide pools, and I can't find any life in the low tide pools. And people I'm talking to in Prince Rupert, guys I've known for years that fish across the harbor all the time in the wintertime, and they pick up winter springs. Well, this year there is very, very, very few winter springs around. And everybody that I'm talking to is telling me they're not seeing feed in the water. This year was a good year for fishing in Prince Rupert, but I think what we're seeing right now is a congregation of fish in the one area still that isn't really being affected by major pollution issues, and that's the North Coast of British Columbia here, where we still have kind of semi-pristine ocean water. But even the fishermen are telling me that they're seeing anomalies. I talked to one commercial fisherman that fishes halibut, and he pulled up quite a few this year that had patches on their body that they'd never seen before, growths they'd never seen before. They still sent them to market. I don't know what they're doing at the fish plants to test these fish. I'm not in that department, but I know that the low tide pools I looked into, I couldn't find any of the little snails or little, I forget what they're called, these tiny little microorganisms that come in with the low tide, sit in the pools, and then, of course, when the high tide comes in, they regenerate. I couldn't find any life in these pools, and I checked 5 different locations around that circle. So kind of disturbing.
As far as I'm concerned, what's going on out there, a lot of the environmental disasters that are going on are being perpetrated by the same people that are supposedly out there to represent the people. For example,
the nuclear power industry.
Well, yeah, but in the conspiracy world, which is no longer a conspiracy, I mean, it's blatantly out there, they done said that they're actually spraying crud in the air. All right, well, Everything has a reaction, you know. For every action is an equal and opposite reaction, is what science says and such. Well, if they're spraying this stuff in the air, and it's causing an adverse effect, it's a domino effect in nature. Just like the BP oil spill, they basically covered it up with corrects it, and basically that corrects it is still out there in the environment. If you got stuff being poured in from Fukushima, which is changing the temperature of the water, that's another factor to lay in there. I think there's so many different things that are going on that are adding to the catastrophe that's unfolding out there. And until the people, the average Joe, finally gets something in gear, such as, for example, every community has a sheriff, all right? The sheriff is the highest law of each of the counties and such, all right? The sheriff even can tell the federal government not to come in to do certain things. Well, people maybe need to go talk to their local sheriff and say, look, I said, if there was somebody who, let's say I go out there and I rent a crop duster, and I start flying over everybody's property and just spraying out this fertilizer or whatever, just everywhere, would that be legal? And obviously it wouldn't be legal. There's all kinds of regulations from everything from pilot licensing into, you know, environmental stuff. And say, well, if I was to do this, would you protect the people and throw me in jail?
Well, only if you were so high up in the atmosphere that when you drop your trails of toxins and they filter down through clouds, then it's legal. It's called chemtrails.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing.
But you can't do it on your field.
If the government's doing something that the people aren't aware of, and most people think the government's out there, you know, they know everything, they got the best scientists, and they're going to be protecting them, but this could have long-term health effects, and then what do you do from that point on? Well, I would say that if you had a conversation with your local sheriff, and you said, look, I don't know what all stuff they're actually spraying in the air. I do know that they have actually said that they're spraying stuff in the air, but would you, at the very least, as the sheriff, the one who's supposedly our last line of defense against tyranny, would you at least question the federal government to ask them what this is and whether or not you want them to be spraying it over your county? You see what I'm trying to say here? Because if you had enough people in every single county of the United States that had the sheriffs that were backing the people and doing their actual job, which is to protect the people's health and safety, then the federal government would get the hit. You know, they're saying that they're doing this Project Solar Shield or whatever to block out the sun to combat global warming, which we all know is a crock anyway, but your average Joe and the majority of all your school teachers believe it's the truth because the mainstream science guy said. Never mind the fact that if you go back and look at the school book totally contradicts global warming due to climate change or due to carbon emissions. Never mind that fact. Never mind photosynthesis or any other process that science has taught that and this is how things work. But you know, there's companies out there stealing from the people, the government's stealing from the people, and they're poisoning the people at the same time. When you're talking about environmental disasters, I mentioned in a video, and actually did a video about it, and I was talking about duckweed and watermill. Alright, well, they'll basically block the sunlight out of your pond. Alright, this stuff's a nightmare once it gets started. You got to finally get the pond back into balance, but this is nature's way of balancing back out a pond.
All you have to do is transfer that energy, put it into something else,
yeah.
Like your feed for your animals, like your heat, like your fertilizer,
yeah.
On and on and on.
Well, when the farmer's out there pumping anhydrous ammonia and stuff into the nitrogen into the soil and fertilizing with manure and all that kind of stuff, he gets some really super rich soil. Alright, well, now that soil is really good to grow plants in. But when it rains, the water washes that nutrients down into a pond. And when a pond becomes over-nutrient, this watermill and duckweed, because the pond's out of balance, will grow like wildfire. It'll duplicate itself once every 24 hours. You'll get twice as what you had the day before. That's how fast it is. Perfect biofuel.
The bad thing too is about them using these fertilizers and injecting this ammonia and stuff into the soil. It only goes into the very top several inches or whatever of this soil and stuff. There's no nutrients that are left within the soil. They run off.
Yeah.
They run off. These are nutrients that, and you know as well as I do, Shaz, is that depending on where soil is located, it will contain different nutrients, different minerals, and these different compositions are purposely made by nature in order to encourage growth of plants that are more receptive to that area, that climate. So nutrients, it's all a package science, that natural science that is more complex than we could ever imagine. People look at the dirt out there and they look at the soil and they see the grass growing, you know, because everybody plants grass now. But it used to be that you could go out and you could walk within a mile, and you would find different areas of different plants that were flourishing in different areas. Not everywhere, but they were in certain areas wherever you walked. You know, there was a patch of this and there was a patch of that. It was because of the nutrient value of the soil that determined what plants were going to grow in that area. And those plants brought in microorganisms and insects and stuff that complemented that soil structure. We don't have that anymore.
Yep.
We don't have that anymore because nature is not at the forefront of science anymore, just like with electricity, just like with energy. Science is devoid of this natural knowledge, this basic natural knowledge that should be the basis of any science.
Well, and that's the whole key is understanding what's going on out there. You know, nature is perfection in itself, but when you tamper with nature, all these pesticides that people use out there have repercussions because, you know, you kill off this specific bug might have had a purpose. If you got too many of a certain type of bug in there, then there's a reason why you got that there. You see what I'm saying? Because nature's always trying to balance itself back out. All of it. Always.
Exactly.
I just read one report. It says about glucifate. Glucifate, I don't know if you want to pronounce that. But one report I read estimates that glucifate is now present in about 8% of the food that's being consumed in the United States today.
Well, and that's probably...
Another report I read on the effect of glucifate on the actual biosphere. What we're talking about, the breakdown of our minerals and our chemicals, our nutrients in our soils that actually provide us with growth of plants is under attack by glyphosate. We've been spraying it on the planet now for, 25 years. It's just an absolute travesty. It's just another part of the puzzle, of the attack on the plant.
It also prevents the roots of the plant from taking up nutrients that would be in the soil.
That's it. That's one of the things. But thanks for jogging my memory on that. I don't have the kind of memory that can follow these points up. That was one of the points they made in this study on the effects of glyphosate on our soil. So what are we doing? We're spraying beryllium, aluminum, mercury, strontium in our atmosphere. We're spraying the planet with glyphosate. We're covering the planet with nuclear isotopes from all the problems we see coming forward with nuclear power plant. What chance does this planet have, Patty?
We've got Monsanto to help us out.
Well, they're going to genetically modify. Well, they are. They're genetically modifying plants now to put up with the aluminum, the beryllium, and the strontium. But they're the only ones that are going to be able to grow these plants because they have a patent on it. Of course, that's going to lead into complete control of the world's food supply in the very near future. But we don't have to worry about that, do we? Simple.
And you're going to change too, Barry.
Yeah, you know what, Patty? I will never have to worry about going and getting chemotherapy. And I don't think about it. All the money we can save spending on chemotherapy, we're going to eliminate society. Isn't that great?
I laugh, but it's not.
I love these guys, man. They have everything figured out.
Well, apparently not, because we've got all kinds of messes to clean up. But I'm saying, doggone it.
Being a little facetious.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I'm right there with you.
Yeah,
if we could just get a little bit of common sense going on, like, you know, I'm actually going to try to get a hold of my local sheriff and see if I can set up a meeting to have him talk. A lot of these people, they ain't got no time to hear the average Joe. So I'm going to test the water and see if my local sheriff guy is a real guy or just a part of the corporate structure or what, because I'm going to sit down and have a conversation with him and talk to him about this stuff that they spray in the air, because where I'm at, Johnson County is 800 square miles of mostly, predominantly farmland. And so, the farmers, they pretty much rely on this, and the people rely on the farmers for food and such like that. And so if there's anything that could potentially, damage that structure, then I think the sheriff should be wanting to be protecting the people. Well, when they spray this stuff, they might be spraying the next county over, and it's still coming this way. You know, once it's in the air, it's everywhere. And then they're doing this stuff worldwide, all right?
And you're eating this stuff. You're eating it right now.
And
because if it goes into the sky, it hits the soil, it gets into our plants, and we are consuming it. We are consuming the most toxic food that the human race has ever seen right now. I read reports on this couple times, and I'm going like, how do you get away from this? How do we get actual good food anymore? Because our soil is being contaminated. It doesn't matter if you're out in the middle of the wilderness somewhere, your soil is still being contaminated. So how do we get those toxins out of our food so we can actually eat good food? And what are the effects of these toxins on our body? There is no study being done anywhere in the world right now on the effect of these chemicals they're spraying in our sky.
That's
and
why
we're supposed to just say, hey, spray us like rats.
That's why we need to somehow or another motivate the people of the world to get, there's this thing called preventive maintenance. You know, we need to put some preventive maintenance on, the future for, you know, our kids and their kids and so on, because if we leave this world in the shape that it is right now to our kids and they leave it in worse shape and then they just dominoes down, eventually humanity is going to be gone, you know. And I'd kind of like to see humanity, you know, finally get that ultimate stage of enlightenment to where, you know, I would love to see where we could have been here in the year 2018 had we'd have been doing things properly all along. You know, there's ways to fertilize.
Yeah, like just a little baby scent fuel.
Yeah. There's ways to fertilize your doggone farm without, spraying too much chemistry,
That's called cow manure.
Yeah, that's nature.
That's all we ever did when on the farm when I was a kid. And I had to drive that tractor and spray that stuff around.
Well, nowadays it's cow manure, anhydrous ammonia, and whatever herbicides or pesticides that they put out there. And all of that wash runoff goes into the ponds, which basically starts to kill off the pond. And once the pond is killed off and there ain't no fish in there to compete with the watermelon and the duckweed, the nature will take over. And it basically the pond will turn green until nature can clean it back up. And it could take years, especially if you're compounding the problem by repeating the same thing year after year. And people are wondering why all these once beautiful lakes are covered with moss and water mill and duckweed. It's because the doggone ecosystem inside that pond is out of whack. The fish, there are fish out there that will eat, plants and they'll balance things out. Nature is so out of balance in so many different directions that it's starting to catch up on us.
We've had a 300% increase in red tides in the planet in the last 7 years.
Yeah.
That's one of the facts that I read. Yeah. We've created approximately 84,000 chemicals in this world today, and I got right to the bottom of this to find out. I tried to really vet this information, but apparently only 500 of those 84,000 chemicals have really ever been studied for their effects on the human race. So that leaves chemicals that have never been tested, and yet we're using them every day in our life. We can go from deodorants to everything that we are putting on our bodies, everything that we use every day are laced with chemicals. We really don't know.
Well,
I know, Patty. This is a good subject, though. It's one that we got to talk about.
You know, though, Barry, when they finally get the transhumanism in there, we're going to have robotic arms anyway.
It doesn't matter, right?
Brains.
That's what they're...
Well, isn't that
that's the next generation.
It's all going in anyway? Can't you see that that's where they're moving us? If you cannot no longer survive on the food, if you can no longer survive on the water, if the land can no longer support life, what is your choice? Transhumanism.
Yep.
That's the only thing that's going to get you through this. That takes you off the dependence of nature and puts it onto your corporate structure who has everything you need, you know?
Yeah.
Your body won't react to glyphosate. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know?
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
That's where we're going.
But...
And then we haven't even talked about AI, man. I can't even begin to wrap my mind around
AI.
Artificial intelligence.
Yeah, that's my level of understanding.
Well, the scariest thing about artificial intelligence is what happens in every single sci-fi when you give a computer the ability to think for itself. It finally, because we build these computers to solve problems. And when the final outcome comes around, the biggest problem that the computer always finds is mankind. You know, you get rid of mankind, you get rid of the problem. That's what the computer thinks. Well, I'm trying to say to people out there, You know, mankind isn't the problem. The choices that mankind make, that's the problem. You know?
Well, here's the thing, is that you've got a fallible system, which is the human mind.
Yep.
And you mix it with a corporate ideology, and then you decide to build a machine on those principles. So what's the outcome going to be? It's not going to be good.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good.
You're destroyed. You know? You're destroyed by your own creation.
it's the same thing with nature and science, and the way things are done today. You have a perfect system that cannot be reproduced. They cannot produce nature. They cannot reproduce. They can grow it. They can genetically engineer it. But they cannot produce the system itself.
No.
Yet, this perfect system of give and take, of complete balance, well, what they do is they say, wait, I'm going to make a system that mimics this system here. This perfect system that I don't have to screw with, that does everything for me, I'm going to abandon it, and I'm going to create this artificial system that requires 10 times more energy, that requires 10 times more infrastructure, 10 times more chemicals and things to make it go, and delivers to me a negative amount of health, energy, and well-being, and I'm gonna market that.
Yeah.
And we're gonna move away from this perfect system. Where's the logic in that? That's a corporate logic.
The end game is complete control of the human race.
It's people, you know, these people in these corporations, they're not evil, they're greedy.
Yeah.
They're profit-driven, you know? It's the people behind that are giving down these, like these governments and these entities that say, I'm only going to fund this university's research into transhumanism. Anything outside of that? No. We're only going to fund this university's development of new petrochemical uses.
Wow.
We're not going to go anywhere else but there. That's where the problem is.
Because
they want control and profit.
I would like to ask everybody out there listening in on this show, and if you're hearing the podcast a year or so after we broadcast today, to go out to find your your local environmentalist groups, and write down ShazizRadio.com, write down the link to the superchat.html, and hand them that. And tell them, if you want solutions to save this planet, then show up here. You know, because I would love to talk to a group of environmentalists. They say that they want to save the planet. But I'm asking, where are they at? Where are they at when all these alternative energy researchers like John Bedini and Joseph Newman and Tesla and all the different researchers out there that have been tormented for years for trying to give the world what the world said they needed? Now, we don't need electricity to survive on this planet. We've been doing it fine for thousands of years before we ever invented electricity. But I'm kind of like, now that we're at this stage where we have the knowledge to be able to keep ourselves warm without, you know, burning firewood or whatever, we can use electricity for comfort and, you know, in keeping our food cool and, you know, advancements and technology. I'm not afraid of technology. I'm just afraid of what people do with it, you know, do the wrong things with it.
It's the type of technology that's being developed. I agree with you, Shaziz. I don't think we need to go back to caves and wood fires, you know, cooking on a wood fire. We have the ability to create technologies that are the same, that can produce energy, just like our electric grid does. It can produce food better than our agricultural system can. It can produce clean water better than our systems and waste management and water system. Everything that is created is done on a corporate structure which is destructive.
Yeah.
But we can create technologies outside of that profit-driven system that are more natural and are more abundant and create that abundance and health without any of the detriment. We have the ability to create the technology.
Well, this circuit
we just need to do it.
This circuit that I'm holding in my hand right now that I keep talking about, it does more for less input. All right, and so that means that at the very least, it is moving towards greater efficiency of being able to literally work in harmony with nature. Because all we're doing is borrowing energy from nature. We're moving energy from one place to the next, like the farmer irrigating his crops. He dug a trench and guided some of that energy where he needed it, and so on. The windmills and the solar panels and all the different alternative energy things out there, they're nothing more than, you know, tools to guide the energy where you want it to go. I'm saying there's a easier way to do it, there's a more efficient and cleaner way to do it, and the technology necessary to make it so is already available. There are brilliant individuals. Whoever initially designed this particular circuit, that was a brilliant individual. There's people out there doing things that if Tesla were alive, Tesla would be proud, because his ideas, his concepts, his research have actually continued on all the way here up to the year 2018. We got cell phones and computers, all because of the one man who, stepped outside the box and questioned science and observation and said that there was something different going on than what the book said. So here we are today. I'm holding this circuit in my hand. It has IC chips and transistors and capacitors, and you can even tune this thing to different frequencies. You can speed it up or slow it down to get whatever voltage you want out the other side. All energy, high voltage, low voltage, high current, whatever. All of it is the same exact energy. The only difference is one is moving faster than the other. That's it. And you can slow it down. If it's moving, like a microwave, for example. A microwave is only a microwave when it comes out of the magnetron into your microwave oven. It's a really super fast short wave, and it begins to start slamming into the wall of the microwave, which begins the process of slowing it down. It's going through the water molecules inside the deal, and because the water is a dipole molecule, has a positive and negative, it causes that water molecule to rock back and forth really fast and causes friction, which in turn causes heat that cooks your food. But nonetheless, that microwave is only a microwave when it's at its speed that it came out of that magnetron. And the farther it gets away and the more things it slams into, the wavelength spreads out and is no longer a microwave. It's still a high frequency wave, but it's no longer a microwave. And so you could take that wave coming out of there and you could slow it down even further. Or you can take that wave that you just slowed down, run it through a system, and ramp it right back up again. You can speed it up, you can slow it down. The frequency of the energy that is being moved from point A to point B, it's all the same exact energy. Radio waves are the same exact energy. Static electricity, AC current, DC current, all of it is exactly...
Tidal waves.
Yeah, everything. It's exactly the same energy.
5G coming.
When that 5G, shows up, if you got a receiver, you could actually turn that into free energy, because while everybody's sending around this super powerful, super fast wave, you can pick that up and send it down and store that energy and reuse it. some people use it for improper purposes, such as mind control and making people crazy, probably even making people sick, because the frequencies have the capability of doing that. All right? If you finally understand how everything is functioning, your body's three quarters covered in water, so obviously you don't want to be standing in front of a microwave, because a microwave will rock your water molecules until you're basically boiling in your own soup. Well, the same thing applies with slower frequencies, and because every frequency, every magnetic field in existence interacts with a water molecule. Everyone. Because the water molecule, it has a positive and it has a negative. A water molecule is the equivalent of a small magnet, right? And the opposites attract and so on down the line. Two positives will repel each other. And so everything that's going around you, all this electromagnetic waves that are going around, they're interacting with you. You know, they're interacting with your mind. Your mind has electrical impulses going on all the time, sending little lightning bolts from this one to that one and sending information, the wavelengths and the frequency of the information landing here and here, putting it's writing like your computer hard drive. And so,
question for you.
Yeah.
Could frequencies be used to kill humans?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so with that being said, I know the answer. I knew the answer to that question before you said it. So you got these 5G towers going to be going into cities approximately, they say, the distance of 850 to 900 feet between these towers that are going to go up in the cities. They could flip the switch, so theoretically they could flip a frequency in these towers and kill people.
Yeah.
Right? Boy,
yeah.
I tell you, that sure solve a lot of problems as far as people getting their guns and trying to stand up against the government, wouldn't it?
Well, it's scary technology.
No, of course, I've thought about this, and I've already looked at this whole situation. I just want to get your take on it, but that alone should have people terrified.
Well, Wi-Fi technology can do the same thing.
Yeah.
I know that. Most people aren't aware of that. I brought this up because most people aren't aware of the fact that this could be turned into a weapon and used against the human race at a time that it should.
You know, water has memory. All right. Well, it does. Water is like a computer hard drive. You know, it has a negative and a positive side on there, and so it will align itself to whatever perspective field it's in. And so, just like storing ones and zeros on a hard drive, you can store ones and zeros in the doggone pool of water. I know that sounds crazy, but think about it. Actually study how a computer hard drive stores information. Right, it's moving little magnetic particles around, ones and zeros. Right, and then the computer reads its sequences of ones and zeros, and you know, you get text on the screen. It's amazing.
I'm gonna have to step out, guys. Nice talking with you folks as usual. Patty, nice talking with you. Nice talking with you, Shazus.
Yeah, you too, Barry.
Have a great
night, brother.
Smoky.
So anyway. Basically, what I'm trying to say to everybody out there, we got it. If the world wants free energy, we got it. It's here. It's now. You're not waiting around for it any longer. You got all the parts necessary. It's just a matter of putting them together. This little circuit right here is just another one of many out there that could be used to pulse coils to get the AC or pulse DC current that you need to run your inefficient appliances. I'm upset because we should be past this right now. If I could have got enough people to the table, enough researchers that want to gather together in a lab, a shop, or whatever, I even try to get a hold of that Manoj guy, the one that invented the energy drink. Because he's out there looking for solutions, and I keep dropping messages saying, looking for ways to cook without using fossil fuels. And I said, that's a simple one. I mean, the electromagnetic induction, you could build a circuit board like this right here that would literally drive an electromagnetic induction. And so for the equivalence of a 9-volt battery, have a frying pan that would work out in the jungle, and you don't even have to have a solar panel hooked to it.
Right. There's so many different ways of, nature has taught us so much. There's so much knowledge to be gained from nature. And we sit here dependent on a corporate system that is devoid of that knowledge. It does not utilize that knowledge. And it's the simplest, cleanest, purest form of energy, and I'm talking about every form of energy, electricity, plant growth, nutrition, all of these things, health, all of these things, air, water, are combined in nature's science, and nature's science is pure.
Yeah, and electricity is natural energy.
Yes, it is. And here we are, a global system set to the technology of this energy expensive. I mean, it costs so much energy to produce 1 watt of energy from petrochemicals.
Yeah.
I mean, the cost is it doesn't pan out. It does not make sense. None of this that we have in this technology that is currently being espoused is makes sense to me.
I would go even far enough to say that even if you wanted to continue to remain using what they call fossil fuel, which is a misnomer, but nonetheless, no need to argue about that because, you know, nobody pays attention to real science anymore. But nonetheless, even if you wanted to continue to use fossil fuel, if you used it properly, you would not have any waste byproduct out the tailpipe. If you got a catalytic converter on that vehicle to reburn the wasted fuel, then that means you're not burning it properly to begin with. You're pushing too much fuel into the combustion chamber, and in order to compensate for too much fuel in the combustion chamber, you got an airflow meter that will put more air in with the excess fuel that you do not need to run that combustion chamber. Every time you stomp down on the gas pedal, you should be injecting less fuel into that combustion chamber, because the faster those pistons move up and down, the less time that you have for a complete burn. So if you're vaporizing that gas and sending it in there just in small, tiny little poofs, little tiny quantities, you will get a complete burn through that system, and you'll be able to go back there and just breathe the doggone exhaust fumes off of that car, and it's not going to kill you because there ain't no carbon monoxide going on. Everything was burned up. The carbon was used. That's what I'm saying. But it's too simple for the complex minds of the world to understand. I had a friend of mine, went to college for years, got so mad at me, and he says, "Oh, you just try to make it sound so simple. There ain't nothing that simple. You just don't understand." I'm saying, it's ridiculously simple. You're seeing it work.
Yeah, it's just the indoctrination that we've been taught. I mean, we've been indoctrinated to believe that nature does not afford us the energy that we need. So we have to develop these synthetic technologies that are based on this heavy usage and little outcome. In other words, we are taught that in order to do this right, we have to produce so much energy and lose half of it to get a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you what. Go back and look at my video called Hydrogen Danger. All right. In that video, we filled up balloons with hydrogen. And keep in mind, when you separate oxygen and hydrogen will expand. I mean, it's a lighter gas, and so it will expand way out there. So it only takes a little bit to fill up a balloon. But nonetheless, pay attention when we ignite these balloons full of hydrogen. The acoustic wave that came up off of that one balloon of hydrogen was so loud it sounded like a shotgun going off. And the wave was so loud that it basically, the only sound you hear through the piezoelectric microphone that the camera had was a pew, you know. But that wasn't the sound that you heard out there in the air. It was a boom. All right, it rocked the house. And that's how much power is just in a little bit of water. And, you know, there was still more water left in the hydrogen cell. So the power potential of water alone has more than enough energy to run every doggone appliance on this planet for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for decades.
It's we just crazy. Have knowledge. Knowledge is key. And the right knowledge is key. And I don't know how we do it, Shaziz, but I do know that people are looking for answers now.
Well,
they are seriously out there trying to find a way because of this system and the way it's going. They have no choice now. So maybe this is the inroad that is going to open up that channel of knowledge to people. Maybe they will start looking at these alternative ways of producing energy, of producing food, more closely. You know, we can only hope, because this system isn't going to get any better that we're under right now. It will never produce what we need produced. It will always shackle us and be more detrimental to the earth and to us. And the free energies, the earth energies, the natural energies, they are, like you said, they're everywhere. It doesn't matter. You just pick and choose what aspect of nature you want to use to help produce your energy.
Yeah.
And you have it. Because that's what produces life, is energy.
Well,
so throughout everything, there is energy. We have such a big, big open array of sources.
Yep.
You know?
Through my observation of nature and my understanding of basic science and physics and mechanics and everything that I've observed and learned and tested and all that, I honestly believe that if I had the right team, that we could literally build a motor generator using every bit of physics and every bit of what we got right now that would be the equivalence of essentially you connect a battery to the doggone thing, it's going to spin the motor. And in the same exact system, using the same exact magnetic field lines collapsing and expanding, we can produce an AC wave that would run into a bridge rectifier that would put energy right back into the drive coil that would help assist that drive coil working. And at this point in the game, we're not pulling energy off of the generator. We're just moving that energy, that the excess energy, back around to make the drive motor more efficient. And then on the next layer over, now we get into the generation portion of the deal, because that magnetic flux is going to travel as wide as that core is. You could have that core as big as the core of the entire Earth, and still that magnetic field will continue to magnetize any steel that it comes in contact with. That's how amazing magnetic fields are. That if you look at when they're got those big magnetic electromagnet cranes at the junkyard, they'll reach down, they'll pick up on a car or a pile of steel, and there's like big heavy pieces of steel dangling from other pieces of steel. All these are magnetizing each other, and they move it over and drop it down and you release the field, and it all falls down, and then the metal demagnetizes naturally. And so there you go. But by understanding that, we can literally guide that magnetic field to wherever we want it to go, produce as much electricity as necessary to run the average household, and build it in an affordable box that the average Joe could actually afford to be able to buy or even build. All I need from anybody out there is, you know, a team. I need somebody who's willing to step out there, and I put my resources with your resources and my knowledge with your knowledge, and we put these pieces of the puzzle together and we get it done and give the world free energy. You know, if you can't find free energy in this world, you're just simply not looking hard enough. And you definitely didn't pay attention in science class. Because everything around you, you're floating in a sea of energy. You, yourself, are energy. I mean, ask anybody who studies biology how the human body functions. What are they going to tell you? there's electrical signals telling your muscles what to do. You know? And your muscles are even smart. There's little nerve endings, and it tells your muscles when you're overworking them. They'll say, oh, stop doing that. My leg hurts. You know? Your body is the most incredible creation in the history of time. You want to talk about machinery and efficiency? Over-unity? 0 point? Perpetual motion? Whatever. You're walking around in a sea of energy that your body's feeding on. Your body's sharing energy with energy. I mean, that's how it works. It's amazing.
Yeah. You know what's amazing about the body, too, is it takes in different forms of energy.
Yeah.
And it produces energy from those different forms of energy. It's a perfect system.
We can even use the air that we breathe in to vibrate our vocal cords to send out distress signals to allow people to know we're in trouble. And the brain can perceive it. Oh, wow, that dude's in trouble. Come on,
exactly.
Folks. All right, well, you know, we're down to that wire again, Patty. Doggone it.
I love your shows. They just seem to go so fast.
Yeah. Well, to all the people out there listening, you know, go over and check out People for People Radio. There's some really awesome folks over there, I'm telling you. I've known them for years. They're just wonderful people. All these different networks that you hear us talking about on here, we post links and whatever, you know. Go visit with these people. Jump over to the super chat .html at Shazia's Radio and say hi. Ask questions. That's what we're sitting here looking at the chat room waiting for a question to pop up. And, you know, we got an awesome guy out there, Stephen Gibbons. He did a resource page. So if you're interested in alternative energy research, there's a look at the top right above the radio player. It says Stephen's resource page. Man, this guy, he had been busy. He got link after link after link of information. Just about everything you've heard in alternative energy research, he's got it there. And what we ain't got, we'll find and put it there, you know. There's all kinds of, the solutions are, if you can talk about an overabundance of resource. You know, this world is an overabundant resource. These minds that come together and do what it is that we do. Is an overabundance resource. Now all we need is for the people out there in this world that really want to make the world a better place, or want to, you know, get alternative energies out there, you know, for the people, you know, people in, you know, what they classify as third world countries. I hate hearing that term because I think everybody should be a first world country. But nonetheless, there's people out there that say are in need, and we are the caretakers. We are the people to give them what they need. We need people to come to the table. We need to discuss things that need to be resolved and point out the solutions. I'm working hard finding things like this circuit deal and doing videos and doing radio shows, and Patty's doing everything she can do, and everybody comes on here sharing information. We're all doing what we can, but we can't do this alone. We need everybody. If you care about this world, share these podcasts with somebody. Go out there and find your environmentalist group. Send them over to Shazia's Radio and have them hear us out. I mean, what have they got to lose? A few minutes of their time? Ain't no worse than standing out there with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying save the trees. Meanwhile, back over there on the other side, somebody chopping down a tree. You know? Common sense. What do you think, Patty?
I think that it's the only way that we have to go that makes any sense today. We have to get back to utilizing what is free and what is natural. And we don't have to give up, like I said, and you said, Shaziz, we don't have to give up our air conditioning. We don't have to give up our heat. We don't have to give up our electricity. We don't have to give up any of these things. None of this is in jeopardy if we go back and look at nature and learn what nature has to teach.
That's right.
We only move forward.
All we got to do is make it better. And if it's
yes,
only 30% efficient, then that leaves room for improvement. And I'm telling you right here and right now, I'm willing to help everybody and his brother make it better. we can get so much incredible efficiency out of the energy that we do use that there will be overabundance. You ain't never going to run out of fossil fuels no matter how hard you try. So might as well give that one up. If you're trying to beat the oil company, they're going to keep the prices the way they do. They're going to keep playing games with you and everybody's lives because they know the truth. They're never going to run out of oil. There's always going to be oil somewhere on this planet because the chemistry's there. They're never going to run out of coal. Now, we'll put all kinds. If you look all over the planet looks like it's been through a war zone because quite literally it has. They've strip mined everything. There's holes all over the doggone planet and sinkholes popping up where there weren't sinkholes before because they're pumping gas and releasing the hydraulic pressure out from underneath the earth that your house might be standing on. And so common sense dictates why take that hydraulic pressure out from underneath your house unless you want to live in a sinkhole, then that I guess would make sense. But nonetheless, I can show you with all the observation that I've made how to use energy like nature's electricity and use it in such an efficient manner where you do not no longer have the need to drill into the earth to try to get gas out or try to get oil out or coal or whatever it is, uranium that you're trying to radiate the world with for some crazy reason. I have no idea. You're using old 1800s and prior technology with a modern day way to make a dangerous type of fuel that you can't get rid of because even after it won't work efficiently, it's still hot. Doggone it. You got enough radioactive waste on this planet to run this planet for the next several thousand years. When are you people going to get your act together?
We got to move away from this profit-driven system.
Yeah.
As long as we require money to do the right thing, to create benefit, we will never have benefit. Money will be the key to everything. That's why we're in the boat that we're in right now. So we have to do away with this profit-driven ideology. Because this is what's keeping us, and this is a pun, this is what's keeping us in the dark.
Yep, that's it. And Stephen posted a link last week or two back. It was funny. He said, public notice, due to recent budget cuts, the rising cost of electricity, gas, and oil, plus the current state of the economy, the light at the end of the tunnel has been turned off.
Right. But we can turn it back on.
Yeah.
We're good.
I love Steven, man. I'll tell you what. He's my favorite person who shows up in that chat room. I'll tell you what. He comes across some really good stuff. But anyway, folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. I'm saying, if you want to fix it, let's get it done. I mean, it's that simple. All the answers are there. You know, Patty's right about this money-motivated mess that the system's got us in. We have answers when people are ready to use it. Try to get some environmentalists to come over here. Try to get some representatives, congressmen or senator. If you have a local congressman, send them here. Tell them to listen to this crazy-haired, mad-haired science guy here. Just hear him out. All right, because we can fix it. We really can. And, if you can get a hold of that guy that made the energy drink, send him over here. I got a solution for him. He said he wanted to learn how to cook, without using fossil fuels. That's ridiculously simple. The technology's there. You just got to have a guy point out, hey, you need that part right there, brother. That'll work. And it's only $5. You got a circuit that'll pulse a DC circuit, and you can actually pulse two separate coils in two separate directions, causing the water molecules in the food to be rocked back and forth so rapidly that you'll cook your food, and you can do it with a 9-volt battery. So there you go.
Simple.
Yeah. All right, everybody. You've been listening to the Mad
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise, its continuing mission.
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations,
to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.